I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there.
I basically had this like root chakra kind of very intense feeling that started happening. It's kind of the base of my spine. And it was just shooting this energy throughout my body that felt like a fire hydrant, like going through every part of my body, to the point where it was like, if I felt any more than I was feeling, I thought I was going to die.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today, I'm joined by author and founder, Keggy Dunlop. Hello.
Are you going to do a British accent for that?
I didn't think about it, but I think unconsciously I was about to.
Oh, hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm so good. This has been a long time coming. It's been a long time.
This is a big deal for me. Your podcast has been like a guiding light for many years in my life. So yeah, it's a real honor to be here.
I think sometimes we can be in the circumstances of change in our lives, and it seems like a never-ending transformation. Mm-hmm. And we might not think of it from a more contextual idea of that it can be normal to be going through those changes at that time in your life. Like, I think of the complete destructions that have happened in, like, when I was 27. Mm-hmm. And I remember someone saying to me later, as I arose from it, which was, I think, around 31 mm-hmm. or 30. Yeah. They were like, oh, you were in your Saturn return. And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I know your podcast and you have a book called The Same. So maybe we can break that down.
Absolutely.
And start there. And why you started that. Yeah.
So for those that might not be familiar, your Saturn return happens in your late 20s into your early 30s, as Saturn returns to the same place in the sky it was when you were born. And with it, it brings this initiation into adulthood. So we go through these sometimes quite tough life lessons. And there's a lot of themes around identity, purpose, responsibility, discipline, karma, restriction, boundaries. So it's like, you know, the heavy stuff. And it happens around every 27 to 29 years because Saturn takes that long to return to the same place in the sky it was when you were born. So when it is back in that spot, it kind of, yeah, it comes with these life lessons. And that's why that time is particularly challenging for many people. And I've sort of centralized my work around it because when I went through it, I felt very isolated and very confused and very alone and didn't know what was going on. And then when someone told me that I was going through my Saturn return, whilst at the time I could compute it a little bit, but it wasn't until I was out the other side that I could really see retrospectively how formative that transition had been and also how real it was for me. And then I wanted to kind of share that with as many people that might be going through a similar feeling in order to make them feel less alone.
Why do you think calling it a Saturn return, and I don't mean just calling it, but like acknowledging or even stepping, because I think of like when someone introduced the idea to me, I thought to myself, oh, there's some of that horoscope stuff, you know, like, yeah. But there was another part of me that was like, makes sense. Thank God someone's labeled this complete fuckery that happens in your late 20s.
Well, I guess it sort of depends on your belief in astrology. I definitely grew up thinking that it was for sort of strange. I wrote in the book that I thought astrology was for strange people that wore sort of baggy clothes and smelled like vegetables. And as I was writing, I was like, hang on, is that who
I am? Like vegetables. I think of patchouli. I think patchouli is that's like the flavor, the scent du jour.
But it's become so popular, and I think we can see in the world we live in today how much of a role it plays in people's life. That has, you know, it's an ancient practice, but it's definitely had a renaissance. And to your sort of question about sort of the validity of it, I guess I believe that astrology is useful if it matters to someone, if it gives someone a sense of anchoring and understanding of what's happening in their life. I think that that's an amazing thing. And I use it as a tool for introspection and self-awareness rather than letting it govern my life. But it would also seem that, you know, judging by our audience that's 94% female, that it seems to lend itself to women a little bit more than men.
I mean, women are more witchy, but I do think there is something what you said, that it sort of offers a validation or an anchor or context. Mm-hmm. Because I know when Kylie and I started dating, she was 26, and I had a rule in my brain, like, don't date someone in their like coming out of their mid-20s. Yeah. Because I had already gone through my own shit at that time. I didn't want to be along someone's side as they went through all that stuff. Mm-hmm. When you're going through it together, it's actually, I was going to say, maybe that's better. Now that's probably why people break up. But yeah, and then she went through her Saturn return. And I'm like, well, signed up for that one.
Yeah. And a lot of people, when they go through it, they will have massive change in their life. So that might mean a breakup, new job, sudden career shift, and a pivot in a direction that everyone else is like, where did that come from? But often it's an idea or something that's been brewing for quite a long time, but it's sort of been dormant in the individual. And then your Saturn return really serves as a moment where you take action, because it's all about our authenticity. So it seeks our excellence. So actually, whilst it feels painful at the time, I think retrospectively, we can all look back and see how necessary that pain was in order to sculpt the version of us we are today.
So when you say it's all about authenticity and seeking excellence, I like that. So do you mean that the experiences that we go through at that time in our, you know, I would suppose it happens a lot in our late 20s, but that transformation is serving us. Like, that's what the idea.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people become a bit fearful about their Saturn return because, you know, it does have this association to break everything down. And like we said at the beginning, people don't like change, especially when it's enforced on them. So it's about reframing it a little bit, because whilst it may pull things away from you and sort of bring down the house of cards, so to speak, it does so that you can build things on solid foundations. And I think a lot of us, regardless of your belief in astrology, spend a large part of our teen years, 20s, trying to fit in, trying to mold ourselves to be who we think we should be, to fit into society and to play a certain role. And then it's often at that time in our late 20s where we're kind of fed up with that. We want to be our true selves, but often after a decade of pretend, we have little idea who that is anymore.
So is the idea from the astrology perspective that the planet coming back to where it was when you were born is this idea of your coming back to your authentic?
100%. Yeah. Hmm.
I mean, it rings true for me. When I was 27, I went through an engagement ending and everything I thought I knew about myself was completely smashed. Like all the masks I wore, all the things, like in order to end the engagement, I had to come back to my authentic self-expression. I think there's such an interesting aspect of that, that I feel like we're constantly unlayering that, like unlayering the people pleasing, unlayering the extra levels of adaptive strategies. Mm-hmm. How does someone know they're in a Saturn return?
So you can find out online by checking out like your Saturn return. You have to have your date of birth, place of birth, time of birth, but it will tell you when it's going to occur. But to be honest, I don't recommend people do that because it makes people very Saturnophobic. You know, they're like, oh my God, yeah. this date's coming.
It's coming next week.
Yeah. Yes. And then anytime anything sort of goes wrong, they think, oh, that's, you know, it's to do with that. Whereas I sort of advise people to just live their life and see how it unfolds, because ultimately you can't control it. And the things often, you know, for instance, your engagement, there was one point where you probably thought that it was the right thing to do. Otherwise you wouldn't have got engaged. And it's when we're kind of, no. Or did you just feel
scared?
You were scared.
Yeah, it was like pressure. I felt a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
It did feel like the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's where the battle happens, because everyone from the outside, it might be our friendship group, it might be our family or just society, is telling us these are the things you should do, that these are the boxes you should tick. And then something in us is stirring, saying, I know that's not right for me, but I don't necessarily know why. I just know it in my being. And I think that's ultimately what I'm trying to encourage people to listen to more through the podcast, through the book and the work that I do, is to trust that inner voice as opposed to the voices of those around you.
To come back to that inner voice. And that's the thing, is it doesn't matter how we arrive at the framework of what makes our life make sense, or try to make our life make sense. It's just that we actually answer the call to move through the transformation. So whether we use Saturn returns as a context, it doesn't really, you know, but I do think it's helpful. I think it's also helpful because we kind of go, there's more of that cosmic fuckery, like, you know, like classic, you know, it's like when Mercury's in retrograde.
Yeah.
People are like,
that's why everything's going on. I mean, I could say that that's why I was having some tech issues before, you know, you can just be like, what can I do? But I don't like using it as an excuse, you know. I think it should be used as a tool for deeper exploration, because it's not, I don't think it's fate versus free will. I think it's very much a dance between the two. But I personally love leaning towards more esoteric things to explore myself, because I think they often tell you something that society doesn't.
Yeah, I feel like the esoteric, there's something about leaning into the spiritual, into the what is beyond, that almost just validates that it has to be. Like there has to, I don't know how you can look at and experience the world and be like, oh, science can explain all of this. There's this, this, this. And it, to me, it's like, holy shit. I think about the birth of our son and how when my wife and son co-sleep, if he starts to get out of deep sleep, she starts to leave deep sleep. Like in the research and looking at how the mother and child interact, the same can happen with the father, but more so with the mother. And actually, the father's testosterone level drops if he's co-sleeping, again, to increase his level of nurturing, which I'm like, it's, to me, I don't know how you can't believe in something so magical, because it's not like my wife has a plug that's going into my son that's saying, can you please change the breast milk consistency because I actually need these things right now. Mm-hmm. This is all happening. Even the fact that a human is built inside her and then comes out from somewhere, I think dancing in the esoteric is actually what humans have always needed to do. And we've become so rigid with ideas of things like science, which I like science, but science is just one aspect of the human experience.
Mm-hmm. And we're always discovering new things. And I think the belief in something outside of ourselves, beyond our comprehension to a degree, is important for the human condition.
Yeah, I agree with that. Jonathan Haidt says that we all have a God-sized hole inside of us. He's an atheist, though. So it's really interesting because he thinks it serves us, but believes
but he doesn't believe.
People, yeah, which is really, I think, quite fascinating because it's like he just knows that there is a role of spirituality in the necessary part of the human condition. And I don't know. I have now just experienced too much crazy stuff to be like, oh, yeah, yeah, we all know how it works. Like, no, we don't. That's why I believe if you start living with just some sense of touch of the magic, of some sense of like, you know what? I didn't like the movie The Secret, but I might try to manifest some shit secretly. I won't tell my friend. You know what I mean?
I do. And also, you know, it's funny how I feel atheists are often always trying to disprove God. You know, in a way, but in a way, it's sort of they see, like you just explained, they see the value in it. And I personally am not necessarily saying God or whatever you want to call it. But for me, having something to believe in is so fundamental to the way that I go and move through life.
Well, I think it is there is a void without something, connection to something greater. Because even if you go into the forest, you can't help but just sense magic. Like you just mm-hmm. can't. If you're really present, everything going on is such a miracle. Mm-hmm. And I saw a stand-up comedian who is making fun of atheists, which I would have identified as an atheist growing up. I went to Catholic school and I really had a rejection of the idea
faith.
Of God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because God was weaponized. So mm-hmm. then I just was like, reject any form of belief. It's all bananas. Look at the way religious people treat each other. You know, what is there? There's a saying that they're all fighting over whose God is more real. You know, like that concept made sense to me because I'd experienced such judgment and shame in the Catholic Church. But then as I got older and I read Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, when I was in my cosmic coming of age, your language, not mine, trademark, Kagadenlop. When I read that book, which for you listening, if you've never read it, it's such a fantastic book. It's about Viktor Frankl's experience through Nazi Germany and in the concentration camps. And he's, a psychiatrist. But he wrote about how man must always have hope, must always have a meaning. Like, there's a famous quote. I mean, there's so many famous quotes from him, but I remember the first time I heard a quote from him was, to live is to suffer, but to survive is to find meaning in your suffering. And I was in the midst of the engagement being over and in this sort of swimming in the soup of who I am. And I remember reading that and thinking, oh, like I'm not just this meat suit who's meant to get a job and become a good provider. Like maybe I actually have a purpose. And I'd never thought about that. I think a rigid mind steals that part of your, you know, and I think it's probably our fear of death that requires us to move to that rigidity. It's like, well, we must just be beings with hearts and veins and arteries and cells. But it's like, even thinking about all those things working together, how can your brain not blow out of your head?
You know, someone actually said to me the day we were talking about this, and they said, you know, when a heart beats for the first time, like, who does that? What's doing that? What makes a heart? And just
magic.
It is just magic. It is just magic. And I think, like you said, when you have the experiences that you do, and I be curious to know as well, because if you're happy to talk about it, about, you know, how psychedelics can play a part in this, in kind of bringing us out of our linear thinking heads and kind of expanding us. And also the importance of getting ourselves back into our bodies, because I think that that's something that we just are not good at.
Yeah, I told my mom that she should do mushrooms.
I've told my mom that she should do mushrooms. It's not gone down very well.
We should do a mushroom mom retreat where all these resistant mothers do mushrooms. And my experience of my mom, because mom, if you're listening to this, it's just my experience, is that she wants to predict things. She wants to control, like she wants to not control me, but like she wants to be in control of her experience. Mm-hmm. And I think what psychedelics really teach is there's a necessary surrender, because you start to go into like visions and things like that. And she was like, I'm definitely not doing that. Like, that's your fear of like being in the unknown. While I respect obviously the choice when you're like, she grew up in the time, and so did I actually, when I'm Canadian, but so big of a time was Nancy Reagan, the first lady, who was like, say no to drugs. You know, that was the war on drugs time. So way to go, mom, say no to drugs. I said yes to drugs, but only certain ones. And I did find that psychedelics gave me exactly what you're talking about. This sort of like, I did them hiking and camping. And I remember looking at a lake and I was just in awe. It was like regular awe jacked up to like a full level. What has been your experience?
So I actually haven't talked about this before because...
Oh, we're getting a expose.
Yeah, you're getting an exclusive on like my psilocybin experience. But I did it with my therapist, which I think was great, because it's sort of fully integrated, because I'm a big advocate for these things. But I also, it's a big deal, you know, what you kind of experience. And I think if you haven't, if you're not doing the work kind of prior and after and before, then it kind of, it probably is quite a lot for you to take. But in my personal experience, I had a very physical experience, which I didn't anticipate, because I just thought it would be that I'd be seeing things and that I'd have visions. And I dabbled in mushrooms before, but this was utterly bizarre. And for those, I'm just going to tell you what happened anyway. I basically had this like root chakra kind of very intense feeling that started happening. It's kind of the base of my spine. And it was just shooting this energy throughout my body that felt like a fire hydrant, like going through every part of my body, to the point where it was like, if I felt any more than I was feeling, I thought I was going to die. Like, I was like, wow. I don't know. I can't feel any more than this right now. Like everything.
Was it a painful feeling or a pleasurable feeling or mix?
It was a mix, but it was just so intense, just so, so intense. And then this energy was just kind of moving around my body. And the energy was very, for lack of a better word, it was quite like a sexual energy, not in the sort of like sex way we think about it, just the energetic of it.
Like a kundalini energy.
Exactly. Which I was not aware of at the time. And I was having these full body tremors that were happening. Oh, so my whole body would start shaking, and as this energy would kind of move through me, and I was just lying there with this blindfold on, thinking, what the hell is happening? Like, what is going on to my body?
Everything's
just everything. And then at like, you know, at one point my arms would be sort of like animated and making signs, and I was like, oh my God, this is so intense. And it was just very, very, I was having this kind of macro experience where I just was just shot out of earth and into the universe, and had these beautiful visions and understanding of how things work and how things operate. And I had this image that I'll never forget that had a sort of wave of souls going across the earth, and it was as if they just all kind of come back in and land and then move out. So this sort of idea that we we never cease to exist, even if our bodies do, like our souls are eternal. But this particular feeling in my body that just went on the whole way through, even after it had subsided for a few days, I was getting these sort of tremors and tics sort of thing. And then the more people I spoke to about, because I was kind of weirded out by it, to be honest. I was like, that whatever just happened was just so wild. And I have no one that can help me with it or can explain it. But after sort of researching and speaking to a few people that were a bit more knowledgeable in that space, I was eventually guided towards Kundalini. And someone said, sounds like you had a Kundalini awakening. And then I kind of went on this deep dive of exploring that and what that meant, and was totally fascinated because everything about it just was like, yes, that is exactly what I was feeling. That is exactly what was happening in my body. But just having some, because the work that I do is very, I guess, still in the mind. It's very intellectualizing things. You know, we're having these conversations. I can understand things in theory. And I've always been a spiritual person, but to have an experience like that, that was so deeply physical from something otherworldly almost, was by far the most profound spiritual experience most profound experience I've ever had. And has led me to kind of wanting to explore that a little bit more. And it's still relatively new territory for me, but just the fact that psilocybin could do that, could activate that, shows what a powerful thing it is and how it should be respected.
Yeah, my first experience with psilocybin was not, it was like going to a bar with friends, which I got to say was incredible. But I did not know the technology. I was actually like, what the technology was. You know, I think that part of being existing out of sort of these, you know, if we were in a tribe and we had, you know, that was our medicine, let's say, then you wouldn't be going to, well, there's no club in the jungle. Maybe there was, actually, I don't know.
Maybe there was.
But like, yeah, maybe there was. But, you know, you're not like, there's not an abuse of the technology. And I think like you're saying, and I see this a lot in Canada and the US too, there's a lot of psilocybin assisted therapy. There's a lot of MDMA and psilocybin. There's a lot of ketamine. I just had actually a guest on recently talking about it, who's an expert in that space. Cause I agree with you. I remember in a study that was done on people who had committed crimes, that of the people who had one psilocybin experience, the percentage likelihood that they were to reoffend went way down, like 60-70%. And I remember reading just more about that, and it was due to that they experience a connection to all things. Like that they finally touch that return back to unity or oneness. And thanks for sharing your experience. We got an exclusive. I'm going to write the Daily Mail. They're going to be super pumped about this. They're trying to run stories on Kate right now, but we'll
get you this. I mean, I understand that it sounds completely mad. You know, I'm fully aware that when I've shared it with certain people, they're just thinking, she's lost her mind.
Yeah.
But I think it's an incredibly powerful thing if it's used in the right way. I am also aware that it's become quite unregulated, and I don't know, if people are vulnerable, it's probably a lot. But then, like you said, if you're seeking that connection, it's a great way to do that.
Yeah, and there's so many ways now to do it and be guided, which I think is the most important. It's like when I did ayahuasca, I was like, I'm not going to do ayahuasca from some guy in Venice, California. No offense if you're that guy. But like, you know, where he has a guru on his business card. Like that's not, I want to go where the plant found its way into humanity. Exactly. I want to be guided by people who have been guided by the plant to actually guide the plant, you know, and that, I witnessed a woman have an awakening to her gifts in a few ceremonies, and it was incredible.
What happened?
Incredible to witness. she was speaking languages that didn't exist. She was, and like such a profound thing to witness. It was actually, I thought a shaman was singing, another shaman was talking, but it was her in the midst of it. And it was just so beautiful to witness just like all the dots that were connected through her life to that experience. And, you know, she's further on that journey, and I'll certainly get her consent to come on the podcast and talk about it, because it was like I couldn't, one, have my own experience of ayahuasca and not have touched much more than this 3D life, but also to be in the company of that experience was really like, whoa.
And wow.
Yeah, like for me, it feels a lot like the connection to, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, the connection to what is greater, or that there is a deeper plan or a deeper purpose of our lives that actually makes me take the struggles that I'm going through and be like, I can't waste this. Like, this is material that I'm being handed, the curriculum. I think it's Ram Dass, his teacher said, well, while you're in school, why don't you take the curriculum? Because he was like, what am I doing on earth? I'm so advanced. Like, I shouldn't be here. You know, I don't think that universe. No, I don't think that. I don't need extra lessons. What do you think about that?
I feel like I have quite a good, especially at the moment, actually quite a consistent dialogue. Like I'm going to sound completely mad on this podcast, though, with, I guess people might call them spirit guides. I sometimes call them angels. I believe that there's always this kind of energy of other around us that's not human, that is guiding us, and that there's a reason that we're here. Whether we figure out that reason whilst we're here, I don't know, but I don't necessarily think that's the point. But I do believe that we as souls have chosen to come into this lifetime for a purpose and for a reason, and it's part of something so huge that I don't think it's even possible for us to comprehend, no matter how much we study philosophy or theory or science and try and combine them all, because we are bound by our linear thought to a degree, by our human experience. So even the concept of eternity is kind of impossible for us to wrap our heads around, because we know our bodies aren't eternal, and we operate and we live in these worlds, and we create this reality where there's these rules and restrictions and these silly trivial problems that we let get in our way. And if you can grasp the sort of vastness of things, even if it's for a fleeting moment, I think we then come back to this feeling of having an understanding of oneness, like you say, but also I think a sense of peace and calm, that we are part of something so magical and so great and so gigantic that we don't really need to understand it, but I think we need to tap into feeling it a little bit more rather than trying to figure everything out.
Yeah, it's almost like what we're talking about is the, not just the returning back to a connection to something greater, which then means a leaving, not a leaving, but sorry, like a using the mind, yes, but also entering back into the body.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we know what that feels like. I was just going to say, you know, we all know we're sort of conditioned out of it. But you've had those experiences where your body, you just get those like sort of shivery feelings that just go through your entire system. And it's, you don't know where it comes from, what it's about, but it's something that's guiding you saying, yes, follow that. Yes, what that person says resonates.
Yeah.
And you also have the same where something feels off and your body kind of retracts and pulls away. But we're so in our heads. And at the moment, I'm really trying to listen to my body's wisdom and trust where that's going to guide me, which is really hard to do, actually, because it doesn't give you a straightforward path. It doesn't say, oh, if you follow this direction, then you'll end up here where you want to be. It just gives you a feeling.
Yeah, that's that sense of like when you're called to meaning, to purpose, to service, in whatever way that means. I don't think it makes sense usually at first. Like, it's like, what do you mean you want me to leave this perfectly good job?
Exactly.
That's ridiculous. Oh, wait, I'm going to teach that thing? Okay. You know, there's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we stop ourselves.
We do. We stop ourselves, and then we have that gnawing sense that lives in, you know, I feel like it's so much in our gut. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, 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 remember when I said, hey, hey, hey. And then the universe is like, okay, like this person needs some extra, like some extra motivation. And I think it follows things like getting sober, getting, you know, where people feel called to some sort of alter, like changing a behavior that's not good for them, which they likely know they shouldn't do because it's not good for them. But what it starts to reveal when you build that level of discernment and choice about what's going in your body, where you're directing your energy, because you're really at the, maybe the wrong term is at war, but you have like thousands of social scientists and marketers whose whole job is to make sure you don't do that, to actually capture the part of you that's being, that's nagging you, like to give you an addiction so that you don't have to listen.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild that in my experience, like, of course, pain and trauma are a lot of the founding reasons of why we have addictions, but that not listening to answering that call of attending to the pain and stepping into meaning and purpose is actually how we're marketed to.
Yeah.
We just ruined the whole industry of sales and marketing.
But it's true, because everything really is catered to numbing and distracting ourselves. I mean, you only have to look at the way people are using technology, and that's something that's just completely out of control. And you notice it if you observe anyone on any kind of commute, when they're thinking and a thought or feelings occurring that they doesn't sit well with them, rather than having the tools and the capacity to be with it, people just grab their phone. They numb it straight away. They're distracted. They don't have to face it. And we don't live in a world that encourages you to be able to tap into your own intuition, your own inner knowing. We have to seek those things out, and we have to be incredibly disciplined with not being distracted and pulled in the direction that most people are.
I think of all the layers of that, of like, we give authority to everything outside of us.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I look at the last 4 years and I'm like, talk about exploitation of authority. Talk about like really derailing people and infantilizing them, you know. And I know recent law was just passed in the UK about hate speech. And it's like, I know there's probably a lot of opinions on that subject, but I think what's really fascinating is you have governments and people saying, we know what's best for you. Let us curate speech. Let us curate your experience. And what it is the further infantilization of people. Mm-hmm. Is that then we're like, oh, mommy and daddy are going to continue to take. So they're going to take care of us. So we lose or never have access to our own autonomous decision making, which I see a lot in personal growth is like, what should I do? And I'm like, yeah. I don't know, but what I do know is we need to get you back into your body so that even in the adventure of figuring out what you want to do, what we really want to do is return back your authority over yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a beautiful piece that you've mentioned, and it really actually ties in. It's a very Saturnian principle, and it was a massive theme for me personally and for many people that will be going through their Saturn return, is we often subcontract our authority outside of ourselves. Because again, we're encouraged to do that. And when we're growing up and we're kind of having a sense of our own identity, we're pushing the boundaries. our parents are often the authority, and then school. And then when we get into adulthood, it's the systems that govern us. And what you mentioned a second ago about, you know, how not listening to ourselves, but we have a world that's basically orchestrated around these governing bodies that tell us what to think, what to do, all of these things. But we can see over the last couple of years how collectively, when that's happened, people still know, they still have that niggling feeling, even if they're not doing the spiritual work, and they're very trusting of the systems that govern us and obedient. I have had so many experiences and conversations with people where they've been told to do something and they just know that it's wrong. And that creates a self-betrayal. It's a self-abandonment. And that's, I think, where we're moving into this really interesting time where I think people are beginning to question and to pull these things apart and to realize and recognize that, you know, the authority has to come from within you. Mm-hmm. But that takes a lot of time and practice, because it's something that we're conditioned out of.
To begin to trust ourselves. Yeah, you have to. I remember my sister said to me, the more you listen to your gut, the more you can trust it. Like, the more it will guide
you. And the louder it will be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think about the people who, you know, I've certainly done that, where I've violated my own morality, violated my own values. But it didn't take that, you know, it took the lessons to be like, oh, that feeling that I have is actually saying, don't do that. You know, but we live in societies and cultures that things like drinking are ways to numb that feeling. Mm-hmm. And actually to allow ourselves to continue to violate our own boundaries. Like, that's why I always say to people, like, if you can't do something sober, don't do it. Like, that's a really good sign that you're trying to turn off your system when you actually need your system for that. You know, one thing that I remember hearing years ago when I was trying to conceptually understand something, and my mentor said to me that the mind can't understand what it's created within. Like, it doesn't have the capacity to logistically understand something that is beyond it.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, it is part of this. It's so there's like a felt sense that really is a guide that is beyond that. I think then if we deconstruct, by the way, you won't sound mad because we've had channels on here, and I sound mad too. So it's the Mad Mark Rose podcast. And I've sounded mad, like angry too. So we're perfect. But I think then you look at, okay, well, and not to go deep down this rabbit hole, but then you go into the idea of like, what is time? And time is a concept that we exist in, that we all agree to. But I remember one time this guy talking to me and saying, imagine if instead of time being on a string, like from start to finish, that time exists on a flat surface. Like, think of it like a football field. And he said that in every moment in your life, you're somewhere on that. And he said, so when you experience a trigger, you're actually bridging two moments.
Mm.
So you're actually in both. And I was like, oh, wow, that's actually really fascinating. Because you could have a memory and feel like you're exactly there. You can have a dream and be in a different place. And I was sober at the time of that conversation too. Although that is the kind of conversation that you usually have on mushrooms, or if you smoke a J every once in a while. But I remember that being like, oh, conceptually, that makes my brain get a little scrambly, because it actually requires me to forget a lot of things I've been taught that create certainty and security. You know what I mean?
And I think we've all had that. I mean, I don't know about you, but when you have dreams where you have a bit of a premonition about something, or something will happen in your dream and then the next day it happens. And it just, what I have that quite a lot, and it just makes you think, like, I think time, like you say, time exists in a way that we can't comprehend. But in terms of being in two different places at once, we all know that, because in our bodies, we go right back, right? When something happens and it sets us off and we're triggered. we're suddenly 4 years old again. And whatever that initial wounding is, suddenly gets resurfaced. But that's, I think, the beautiful part of healing, is recognizing that.
What do you think is the most important, or some of the most important components that have contributed to your healing and you see being very helpful to the people you support and guide?
I would definitely say that piece around trusting your own inner knowing and doing whatever you need to do in your life to create enough space for that, and to be aware of what ways you're numbing it or dulling it down. Because like you said, with alcohol, I think people will sometimes be living a life where they're ticking all the boxes. Everyone's told them they've got a great job. They should be very happy, great partner, whatever it might be. But they've got this niggling feeling. And then they're like, I don't know what to do about that niggling feeling. So I'll just have some wine, or I'll just eat a lot, or I don't know, go shopping, be on technology all the time. So it's about, firstly, I think making sure that you're making enough space to allow that voice to even have its moment and not numbing it. And when you start to tune into it, actually valuing that rather than just putting it to the side, allowing yourself the grace that if something feels off, there's a big chance it is, rather than just going, oh, I can't follow or trust that feeling. So I think that's a big part of my work. And that's something that's a constant practice for me as well, because as humans, we love to go to other people and seek advice. We often will go and we'll sort of frame something in a way that makes the other person affirm that we're on the right path, even though we know we're not. Mm-hmm. You know, because we don't want to face the blank canvas of starting again in whatever capacity that might be, because we are afraid of the unknown. So also to reframe that we often have this idea that by 30, especially, like, life has got to file itself into this meaning where everything's sort of set and perfect. I think we all know that that's not how it works. And rather than this idea or concept of everything having to be forever and figured out, and this is the path and this is the career and this is the person, to look at things as chapters, you know, and maybe you'll go through a million chapters with one person, fantastic. But this idea that if we change, we're failing. If a relationship ends, we're failing. Or if a career ends and we change course and start again, that we failed. And I think that that's a really limiting thing that we believe about ourselves that makes people feel quite stuck. And so that's something, again, that's an exercise that I have to practice, because society tells you to kind of get in line. So that's definitely one. And to kind of think outside the lines of linear thought, to explore doing things a little bit differently, to lean on these more esoteric and abstract things and see whether it resonates with you and brings you back to your truth and your authenticity.
I love that you really speak about it being contextualized through these different ways of seeing what you're going through. But it's not like that, you're not saying, well, Mercury's in retrograde, Saturn's returning, like, what am I to do? But you're really saying, like, no matter what you're in, wake up to choice, wake up to authority, wake up to, like, that you still have to enter the space of choice. You still have to enter the space of will.
Yeah. And you have to hear the calling.
Yeah. And it feel, and the first choice is saying yes to the call. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I don't know what this means, but all of a sudden I'm now into Saturn returning, and I wasn't into anything to do with astrology a couple of weeks ago. You know, I said they smell like vegetables, the people into that stuff. That's hilarious that you said that. If you're into astrology, we don't actually believe that.
I mean, I'm into astrology, so I can say
patchouli,
it.
Though, I think patchouli. Patchouli does. I want to put out a public health announcement that patchouli is the worst smell ever. I do not like it. It's the worst. And I know if you're listening and you're like, I love patchouli. I use that as deodorant. And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't work. It's not good.
But like you say, I think listening, hearing the call, acting upon it, and then this authority piece is so huge. It's so huge because when we have that feeling, we all tend to go to someone else. And, you know, even in the space that we're in, where people become sort of hero worshipped a little bit, and especially people that are kind of on a path or starting one, they're in a way often quite vulnerable. And so they're more inclined to subcontract their authority onto other people. And that's where things can get a little bit messy. But I think the real important stuff is making sure people understand that they have that authority within them. They don't need to seek it from other people.
When we can finally step into that self-authorship, self-responsibility, that's a big one to turn, because all of a sudden you go from, you know, essentially being a child, you know, seeking whatever in the world, to being an adult who's not reacting anymore, who's actually saying, you know what, I'm going to choose this life. I do think it is a strange mystery that you have to say yes to, though. You know, it's like, I remember when I, leaving that engagement birthed everything. It birthed everything. And it made me go on a journey of going like, it got me here, which I think, and I get reminded, I know you talk about constantly asking the same questions of yourself, like continuing to be in that space of the work. And the same for me, it's like, can we trust what continues? Like, oh, I thought I knew what I was doing with my life. Oh, wait, I don't. I thought I had that thing. Oh, I thought that felt good when I started. Now it doesn't feel good.
Yeah, but I think that that's such a beautiful thing. Again, like you, when you went through that engagement ending, and then it put you on this path, and then you had this beautiful experience, it's also totally fair and valid that you get to a point where you're like, this isn't doing it for me anymore. You know, this, even when everyone's loving the work that you're doing and the contribution you're making to the world, but you suddenly feel like this isn't it. And that voice is going, we want you to go there. And everyone's going, why do you go there? This thing's popping. But you just have to trust that. And I think that that is really hard. And I've actually spoken to a lot of people that are, you know, by getting to interview, like you do, so many incredible thought leaders. And I can sometimes see it's like the things that we think we all want and that level of success and credibility comes with a huge amount of responsibility. And the bigger it gets, the harder it is to then change course or shift. And I'm at a point now where Saturn Returns has brought me so much joy. I definitely want to continue it, but I'm definitely feeling that calling to lean back into my creativity, because I was doing music before the podcast, which not many people know. And it doesn't make any sense to anybody from the outside, but I'm like, I've got to do that. I've got to water my own inner world, because that I know is where everything externally will flourish, because it doesn't matter what it looks like externally to other people if internally you don't feel fulfilled or like you're on the right path or doing something that lights your soul up. And to me, that is success.
Music. Were you singing or creating music? Like,
I was writing music, I was releasing music, and I'm putting out a project. I'm basically pausing the podcast for a little bit over the summer to put out this music project.
What? What is the project?
It's this project that I went and I actually recorded it in the pandemic. And that is how long it's taken me to actually get. Because we always avoid the thing that's the most vulnerable. That's usually where we need to go. Where there's the most fear, go there. And yeah. That for me feels like the most vulnerable space to be in, but it's also feels very electric and exciting and something that really, really nurturing for me. It was very intertwined with my Saturn return journey, because when I went to LA at 27, I was doing music. And it was where I really cultivated these principles of discipline, authority, autonomy, restriction. I became very dedicated to something that I really loved without knowing where it would take me. And oddly, it took me in a totally different direction.
Yeah.
But I feel like now I want to slightly pivot back to, yeah, putting out poetry, music.
Oh, I've seen you've been doing that.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit, but I want to lean into it a little bit more because, you know, we're on the sort of edge is where the magic happens. So we've always got to kind of seek out where that edge is.
Yeah, I remember my friend Brian Reeves, who writes incredible stuff. He said that there's not a moment that he hits publish that he's not terrified. And that's the sign that he's written a good thing. Exactly. I think about that a lot with like Rick Rubin's work.
Oh, he's like my absolute hero at the moment. I'm just...
Right?
Yeah. His book is really helping. I've got a couple of books around creativity that are helping me kind of get out of my own way because, you know, talking about numbing and on that side of things, but the thing that we're afraid of being seen.
That's the place. That's the magic. That's the place to go.
That's the place to go.
There's a quote from Stephen Pressfield from his book, From the War of Art, that he shares. Mm-hmm. And it's from a guy named Robert McKee. And it's so good. I have to share it. He says, a hack, he says, is a writer who second guesses his audience. When the hack sits down to work, he doesn't ask himself what's in his own heart. He asks what the market is looking for. The hack condescends to his audience. He thinks he's superior to them. The truth is he's scared to death of them, or more accurately, scared of being authentic in front of them, scared of writing what he really feels or believes, what he himself thinks is interesting. He's afraid it won't sell. So he tries to anticipate what the market wants, then gives it to them. In other words, the hack writes hierarchically. He writes what he imagines will play well in the eyes of others. He does not ask himself, what do I myself want to write? What do I think is important? Instead, he asks, what's hot? What can I make a deal for? The hack is like a politician who consults the polls before he takes a position. He's a demagogue. He panders. And I was like, oh, shit.
That's it. That is the work. And that is where I'm at the moment, because our ego and all of this stuff gets in the way and we try and cater to this audience and try and, yeah. And it just stops us in our tracks. But I also have a hunch at the moment, and I believe that the importance of creativity as a spiritual practice and discipline is going to be so, so key.
So you think for people listening to lean into some form of creative activity
100%.
Is essential.
I think that we as we get older, you know, when we're young, we play, we create, we make art, we use our imagination, and then it kind of, we go into school and go into this more rigid linear way of thinking. And then if it's not our earner, if it's not our career, we just completely disengage from it. But I believe that as a spiritual practice, reconnecting with our creative self is so important, but it's going to be really, really important in the future. This is my hunch. I think it's to do with AI.
I think you're right. As I joke a lot on the pod that there's going to be two paths that people take. One, people will return to the earth and mm-hmm. become more analog again, which I think that's happening. And two, people will become fucking computers. So they'll step into the singularity, which I don't think there really is distance from the singularity where we become computers, because think about how much is subcontracted out to our phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think AI obviously can serve a role, but I think there's something about the cellular experience. Like when I say not cell phone, but cell, like mm-hmm. body, the somatic experience of human art, of the human, of community, something that no matter how big Facebook or Instagram or any of these platforms get, you could have a million people that you interact with, but not have one person you can call at 2 a.m. And yeah. And the person you can call will always be more important.
100%. And to kind of go back to, you know, Rick Rubin, I think it's in Rick Rubin's book, he talks about creativity being this sort of thing that's outside of us that we can access. We don't really know how we can access. I think that in itself is a really magical thing. Like, why does it resonate with us? Why does it feel the way that it does to listen to music? Why does a piece of art evoke such an emotional response? Why does it give us that feeling? Like, where does it come from? And I think it's something that does transcend time in that sense. We're tapping into something. And that's why I think it's really important. Like, when I write poetry, I have no idea. I have no idea what I'm talking about when I'm writing poetry. And I've done it since I was a child. And the poems I wrote when I was little, I read them now and I think, whoa, that's coming from somewhere else. I don't know where that's coming from, but that is not, like, I don't know. Yeah. And it's magic.
Think of all the greatest pieces of writing. You're right. The poems that move us, the spoken word, the music, that they hit something inside of us. You know, there's that saying that you can read a book and not understand it conceptually, but you actually read it through the code that it's written in, like through the energetic, the vibration. Mm-hmm. I think that's true. I read a book like Women Who Dance with Wolves.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy fuck, this book was written with a torch. Like, it is so beautiful. And
such an important book.
Yeah, I'm a man. And I was like, everybody should read this. Women should especially read this because it just, I think, wakes up a truth. You know, and I know you were saying earlier that 94% of your audience is female. And I think what draws, you know, maybe the idea of astrology offers, maybe there's more appeal to that. Just culturally, there's more of like a social acceptance for a woman to look at their horoscopes and stuff than a man. We're like, I don't know, she's a Cancer and I don't know, I'm a Scorpio. But I think there is, because there has been such derailing of the inner authority of women,
yeah,
that it makes sense that there is a journey to wake that fire,
yeah,
you know, and to return back. Oh yeah. And to restore the sacredness to, you know, the womb, the portal to the earth. It's all, you know, about getting back in balance and reverence with the feminine. And in the journey of doing that, of doing the same with the masculine, but the restoration has to occur as well. So thanks for your work.
And also, you know, the world that we live in is very much catered towards the male hormonal cycle, everything. So women have had to kind of slot into that. So I do think that the astrology stuff, the connecting with the moon, it's all about this reawakening that's happening. And I think it's very exciting.
It's so exciting. And it's like, how can we deny things like the moon interacts with the tides, interacts with women interact. Women, when they hang out together, sync up. I mean, I'm like, it's all such magical stuff. And we're like, I just think it's so funny that we want to cling to certainties of things because we're so terrified of the mystery. But yet the mystery is where it all lives. And I know you're a big proponent and guide in that space. And I've so enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you for having me. It's such a joy to speak to you and to be here.
Where can people who are listening find more of your new music, but also...
Well, it depends where this comes out. So this is kind of like, I'm going to...
Well, we can coordinate when it comes out. So you just tell us.
Yeah, that would be great. So the music is going to be coming out in the summer. I'm putting a project together around it that's going to have the podcast component. So I'm super excited about that. If you want to hear my music project, you can find me. I'm scared to say because I'm like, it's not out yet. But you can find me on Instagram at Kagi's World and listen to my music and the Saturn Returns podcast on anywhere you get your podcasts. And the Saturn Returns or Cosmic Coming of Age book is available at all retailers.
Beautiful. Thank you again for coming on, Kagi. Appreciate
you. Thank you.